From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. During the past 2 weeks of political conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia, we saw a lot of larger-than-life egos, which raises a question. Are big egos necessary for the visionaries, the geniuses, the great men and women who have shaped the world? Or are supersized egos as harmful as they are helpful? From the Greeks to Sigmund Freud to Kim Kardashian, author Ryan Holiday argues that ego is the enemy and that fighting our egos is what will actually bring us happiness. This hour on Point, ego as an impediment to success. You can join us on air or online. Do you think it's possible to have a healthy ego? Or do you think ego is equivalent to arrogance? Does a big ego do more good or harm? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Facebook and Twitter at onpointradio. And joining us now from Austin, Texas, is Ryan Holiday, the author of the new book, Ego is the Enemy. You can find an excerpt of the book on our website, onpointradio.org. Ryan is a media strategist, a media columnist, editor-at-large for the New York Observer. His previous books include Trust Me, I'm Lying, Confessions of a Media Manipulator, and The Obstacle is the Way. Ryan Holiday, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I think we have to start with some definitions, because certainly there's the Freudian definition of what ego is. Your definition is slightly different. Can you tell us what you mean when you talk about ego?
Sure. I'm definitely not using the Freudian definition. I probably couldn't give that to you if I tried. I'm using it in the colloquial sense, right? Bill Walsh, the famous football coach, he has an amazing definition, which I love. He says, you know, ego is when self-confidence becomes arrogance, assertiveness becomes obstinacy, and self-assurance becomes reckless abandon. I think this is the kind of ego that we all see in the course of our daily lives when we catch ourselves doing things in retrospect. Why did I care so much about that? Why was I so upset? Why did I need to prove that I was right? That's the sort of day-to-day ego that I'm referring to.
Is it sort of where confidence begins to tip into arrogance? Is that where we see the dividing line?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's worth making a distinction between confidence and ego. Certainly, you know, if we use Aristotle's golden mean, you know, we have self-absorption in a positive way on one end. We have self-absorption in the sort of self-loathing sense on the other. And maybe you could put confidence there in the middle. You know, one of the figures I quote in the book is Frank Shamrock. He was a pioneer of mixed martial arts and a UFC champion. And he's basically saying, you know, confidence is earned. It's based on what is real. And then I think what you would say is ego is what we wish or what we feel, but it's not necessarily true. And so that distinction, you know, confidence, earning it every day in the work, knowing what you're capable of, you have to have that to achieve something. But simply wishing that you can achieve something or wishing that you are capable of it does not make it so.
And as the title of your book makes very clear, I mean, it's called Ego is the Enemy. That's pretty frank. You basically say that ego can affect us or harm us or handicap us in every way, you know, from what we aspire to do to the way we view our successes to the way we view our failures. You know, you talk about how it can blind us to our faults, or because we don't want to fail, we may not want to try new things because sometimes trying new things involves some failure. So give us a sense of how you think it's handicapping to have a big ego.
Sure. So if we're defining ego then as selfishness and endless competitiveness and delusion and arrogance, you can see how this is quickly going to get in the way of a lot of things, not just in the way of your own work, but in the way of your relationships with which further that work. You know, there's a line from Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher, which I love, that I think encapsulates the way ego holds us back. He says, you know, one cannot learn that which they think they already know. And if so, ego is this unfounded confidence, this sort of certainty that we're right, what it really does is it kind of flash freezes us in place. We're no longer able to learn. We're not able to take feedback. We're not even able to see the way in which our work is you know, resounding or landing on the audience. So we're really just flying blind or flying guided only by our own sense of certainty, which can be right for a time. But I think what we see in history is that eventually this eventually our sort of personal reality becomes so at odds with external reality that it creates a crash of some kind.
And Ryan Holiday, you sort of just outlined in a way how you got interested in this book, because your own personal and professional story has you've experienced it in some ways. I mean, I think by many objective measures, you've been successful professionally, had a corporate job at American Apparel as director of marketing. You've written some books that sold well. You know, you've worked with some pretty big ego people. And you're not even 30 yet. Are you late 20s?
I just turned 29.
All right. So you, again, that's relatively early, but you also found that there's a downside to all this. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal life and how this led you to this book?
Yeah, I think ego and workaholism are very related, right? It's the inability to say no to anything, the inability not to jump into chaos and crises, because your self-worth is tied up in always being involved, always being the center of attention or the center of activity. And I certainly found that in my own life, with American Apparel and the events that company went through over the last few years, you know, sort of not being able to separate myself from it.
That involved a very tumultuous departure of a CEO who then sued the company, which really dragged the company down financially.
Yes, and a hostile takeover and sort of a media proxy war. You know, it's all of the things that we would probably write as a cautionary tale against ego. And I was sort of there in the center of that, and I was caught up in it in my own way. And I think what you find is that if you feel like your work or your success says something about you as a person, it immediately becomes incredibly hard for you to see any of that objectively, both when you're being successful and when you are going through some sort of difficulty. And sort of needing to separate that out and ask myself, what's important to me? What am I trying to do with my life? That was a painful process of severing a lot of relationships and detangling myself from a situation that no one forced me into, that I dove into willingly. And I think you see that throughout history as well. It's not being able to see things the way that other less interested people are able to so clearly see them. And that's why, I remember as I was sort of getting myself into this, my wife very clearly warning me and laying out exactly how this was going to go. And that's where you go, I really appreciate what you're saying, but you just don't understand. And of course, they do understand. It's you who doesn't understand.
It's your ego preventing you from seeing that other view.
Exactly.
Ryan Holiday, you also worked at one point with Tucker Max. Many people will recognize that name as an author who, to say the least, writes somewhat coarse books sometimes about his own kind of, he kind of celebrates his own depravity, you might say. And this is a June 24th interview he did with Nick Coe in which he talks about the limits of success.
Money, wealth, fame, girls, I was in great shape. There was literally nothing left external to improve in my life. Or the improvements were just marginal, So it's like, okay, if I'm still really not where I want to be, then it's got to be something internal.
So Ryan Holiday, I want you to sort of give us the psychological profile there. When someone says there was literally nothing left external to improve in my life, is that ever possible? Or is that someone so blinded by their own perceived accomplishments that they can't see how they might be a better person?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think what Tucker was going through there, and I was certainly around when that was happening, was realizing that, becoming famous, selling lots of books, becoming successful, ultimately these things don't make you happy and they don't make you feel much better about yourself beyond a certain point. You know, they've done those studies where, above, say, $70,000 a year, there's very little improvement that money brings to your personal happiness. I think that is what we see with all forms of success in one way or another. And I think what Tucker realized is that having a stable and happy personal life was ultimately what he had been chasing this whole time, and he couldn't find. And I've gone through that. I think a lot of people go through that. Although some people are so blinded by their ego, or they're so blinded by that insecurity and that pain that they feel, that they blow past it. And that's what drives, in some ways, that's what drives them to accomplish these mind-blowing things. And while from the outside we might see, it might appear to us that that is happiness, that that is fulfilling, it in fact is increasingly empty as they go along.
You know, you have many, many quotes in the book throughout history of people talking about ego, going all the way back to Plato. We're talking about more than 2,000 years ago. He warned about people who are guilty of, as he put it, feasting on their own thoughts. So the fact that it dates back to Plato tells us that this is not a new idea, that we need to be careful about ego. On the other hand, you seem to believe it's more challenging than ever because we really exist in an era that glorifies social media, encourages us to announce news about ourselves, brag to our followers. Do you feel like we are more challenged than ever before because of the circumstances we live in?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't pick up an ancient Greek play or a Roman tragedy and not sort of see the themes of hubris and ego. I mean, even Napoleon was saying, you know, great men have sought happiness and found fame. And so I think that connects to what you were pointing out with Tucker. But as timeless as that theme is, you know, that's a world without Instagram. That's without a world of Twitter and social media. A friend of mine gave me this line, which I ended up putting in the book. He was saying, you know, it used to be only cult leaders that had followers, right? And now everyone does. And we have these sort of imaginary internet points that are not only showing how we're doing, they show how we're doing relative to everyone else, even people that we claim not to care about or that we're not competing with. So this sort of visibility into the private lives of everyone else, plus the very human trait of trying to have more and more and more all the time, I think makes it incredibly hard. It would be, you know, psychologists talk about this idea of the imaginary audience, which is sort of essential to the adolescent phase in our lives. You know, that's like the little girl who spends hours in front of the mirror, or the little boy who's embarrassed in school and he can't.
Because he thinks everyone is watching him.
Yeah, we're supposed to grow out of that. But with social media, we haven't. In fact, it's become a permanent part of our day-to-day lives.
We're talking about ego with author Ryan Holiday. His new book is Ego is the Enemy. We're going out with Drake's Started from the Bottom. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm a worry about me, give about you. Just as a reminder to myself. I wear every single chain, even when I'm in the house. Because we started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team. Yeah, started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. No. I want you to want me. I need you to need me. This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook, and that's Cheap Trick's Want You to Want Me. We are talking with author Ryan Holiday about his new book, Ego is the Enemy. Join this conversation. Let us know if you think ego is a destructive force, or do you think it's critical to success? Tell us how you believe a big ego can help or hurt or both. And Ryan Holiday, I love that line you used before the break about imaginary internet points, because it's so true that today professional success and to a great degree self-worth for many people is based so much in online likes and numbers of followers. And we have this piece of sound that I think speaks nicely to that. It's about this ABC TV show from 2014 called Selfie. It followed a woman trying to change her social media-obsessed lifestyle. And here's a scene where a character played by John Cho later helps another character adjust her online habits, and he's lamenting her use of social media.
Social media is this giant fingernail scratching this woman's itch for constant attention.
Giant fingernail.
Oh, look at me. Something good happened. Hashtag blessed. Oh, look at me. Something bad happened. Hashtag still blessed. I'm at the gym. Hashtag gym flow. I'm at work. Hashtag workflow. Oh, I'm standing near a baby. Hashtag baby flow. Hashtag circle of life. Hashtag blessed.
Your volume is really high right now.
Why does a generation feel compelled to tweet every item that goes into their mouths?
And Ryan Holiday, we have a listener who wants to weigh in on that very point. This is Wyatt calling from Boston. Wyatt, your thoughts about the sort of compulsion we have today to indulge our egos.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, clearly I'm working with young people and I'm seeing a lot of ego with their conversation around social media, what they're accomplishing in the internet world, what they're accomplishing with friends and Snapchat. And I'm just curious, when developmentally will this shift for young people? Because if the stakes are high with all of this internet happening all over the world, will they have a distorted view of reality with respect to ego and how to go for theirs? I mean, will this just turn into a world full of people who are just having to get likes in order to do well?
That's a great question, Wyatt. And I think it's not only when developmentally will it shift, but if developmentally will people shift. Ryan Holiday, you want to weigh in on that?
I'm not sure that it is. I mean, I think it plays so much into our psychology and our biology that it makes it very hard to resist. You know, in academia, they talk about this thing, and also in science, the publication bias, right? Very rarely does an academic journal publish an experiment where the results are negative or where the results are inconclusive. So when you pick up a journal, it looks like the world is much more clear and certain and that experiments go well more often than they don't. And I think social media is that too, right? Although in that clip you were playing, he's talking about how we share everything. The reality is we don't. We only share what's going well, or when we want sort of pity and validation from other people, we don't express the everyday, what Walker Percy would call the everydayness of our lives. In fact, we sort of pretend that that doesn't exist. Like when I look at my own Instagram feed, I could be forgiven for thinking my life is much more awesome than it actually is, right? And so I think that's why it's so tempting. It's like reality is complicated. It's unsexy. There's a lot of hard work. It's from, you know, minute to minute. But social media is this narrative, this story we get to tell the world. And oftentimes that feels better than what is actually true.
Another piece of sound feels really appropriate here. This is a scene from the third season of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. This is where Kim's mother points out Kim Kardashian's inability to refrain from taking selfies even during incredibly inappropriate moments.
Kim, would you stop taking pictures of yourself? Your sister's going to jail.
Kim, oh, we need the effect of everyone on what we're doing.
So, Ryan, how that's obviously a bit of a stretch, but it is, as you said, this sort of feeling that we have to indulge our egos by letting people know what we're up to. We want to get the feedback, positive feedback. It's part of the trend today.
I think so. And look, if you're trying to do something difficult, you're trying to write a book, you're trying to practice for some contest, or you're trying to learn a craft, the social media points, the narrative we can publish online is always going to be easier and it's always going to be cleaner. And so I think there's this wonderful Twitter account, which I would urge everyone to check out. It's called I'm Working on My Novel. And it's just people tweeting about how they're working on their novels, which, you know, by definition, they're not doing because they're actually on social media. And so, you know, I think that's the ultimate cost, is that we can conflate or confuse talking and sharing about something with doing the hard, unsexy work of building a foundation and then ultimately, you know, an edifice that will stand up.
One comment came in on our website from a listener named Brett Earl, and he writes, depends on what is meant by big ego. If we're talking about an ego owned by the likes of Mr. Trump, then we are talking about someone's ego that endangers and is abusive. But one can have a big ego whereby one is appropriately confident and still be compassionate and generous. Ego gets a bad name. Now, that it brings in some politics here, because obviously Donald Trump is an interesting sort of current public example of the role ego plays. Let's hear something he said recently that's been quoted so many times in reference to ego. This is Trump at the Republican National Convention on July 21st speaking about why he deserves to be president.
Nobody knows the system better than me. Which is why I alone can fix it.
Ryan Holiday, diagnosis there. How would you diagnose that ego?
I mean, obviously malignant and toxic ego. And not just from a political standpoint. I think you take politics out. It's interesting to watch Donald Trump. On the one hand, he's been an astute sort of manipulator of the media and gotten, you know, literally billions of dollars worth of free publicity. And you could say that perhaps that's a benefit of ego, or that's it working for him. You know, the unending belief that he alone can fix it, I guess that has served him somewhat well. But it has also generated unforced error after unforced error. I mean, we saw over the weekend, him attacking the Khan family. A normal politician or someone slightly less intent on dominating and winning every interaction would say, this is not a hill I need to die on. This is not a family that I need to attack. I don't need to say anything here besides, you know, thank you for your service. And instead, he has to put out statement after statement that is only increasing the scrutiny and increasing the backlash against this comment. it. And I think ultimately that's the real danger of ego. It's not only is it the unforced errors, but it's often when everyone around them is begging them not to do it and trying so desperately to convince them that there's nothing in it for them, they really can't not do it. They cannot turn it off.
And, well, Ryan, Holiday, you know, you say Trump has a malignant and toxic ego, but we had a caller who we lost, unfortunately, but this caller's view was that that's really just confidence. You know, that's and that person sort of appreciated someone willing to, as we often hear, not worry about being politically correct, say what you think. So some people view what you view as toxic as a very confident person.
Well, I guess to go back to this distinction between based on what is real and what we wish to be true, I think when you hear Donald Trump speak, what you find is real confidence in his opinions, but very little in the way of justifications or sort of an understanding of the history or the factors going into that decision. So when they asked him earlier on in the election, you know, who advises you on foreign policy, and he says, "I advise myself," you know, that's not confidence. That's foolishness. I would say one can always trust their own opinion at the end of the day, but to not avail yourself of experts and wiser and more knowledgeable people, that is where Bill Walsh is saying where confidence becomes arrogance and where it becomes dangerous and unnecessarily so, I would say.
Let's go to a caller. This is caller Tom from Dayton, Ohio. And Tom, your thoughts about everything we're talking about ego and its how it helps and how it hurts.
Yes, and just a thank you to taking my call, both you, Ryan, and Sasha. Thought as it relates to studying past inventors and scientists, I agree with Ryan that it is a flaw. It can be a flaw in terms of ego. And if you look at the Wright brothers and their inventions, and really could arguably be noted as one of the largest and most significant in terms of flight to mankind and human beings as a species. So very non-egocentric people, and in fact allowed them to collaborate, as Ryan pointed out, with Mr. Trump, who, you know, the collaboration with Patterson and Kettering and these other scientists that were developing technologies to help the human race is very significant. And in their teachings and writings, you'll see a pattern, which is avoidance of their arrogance, putting aside their own egos to collaborate and work together. And that's what I would encourage our species to do, is try to look at the problems at hand and solve them together. Furthermore, one last comment, and I'll let another caller get on here, is Trump is not the only guilty one in the ego focus of our society. Look at Hillary. She, a lot of times, they believe they're above the law. And I think if you look at our society, we're based on laws and organization of structure. And if you have a large ego, you can somehow justify putting yourself above the law, like the email scandal and a lot of other things I'm sure that have gone on in both of their histories. So I would just encourage listeners to research the people in our world as a species that made us great and look at how they set aside their egos, as Ryan had pointed out, to collaborate and work together.
Tom, thank you very much for that. And let's go to another caller, coincidentally, also from Dayton, Ohio. This is Stephen. Stephen, your thoughts about ego.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was a creative professional for a long, long time. I'm retired now. And one of the things I learned in design school was how to listen. And it seems like people that are so egocentric, they've always got their fingers in their ears. They're not willing to listen to the people around them, such as Trump. A lot of yes men, king's new clothes, oh, you look great, you know, but the reality's not there. The best people that I've worked with have been people as leaders and directors, have been focused, but they're not egocentric. They surround themselves with great players, great team. And they let them do their job, and they find the best solution, as Tom had mentioned. they're not egocentric.
I think that's right.
To bring that up, it seems like listening was a big, big deal for avoiding a toxic ego. And in closing, I want to let you know that one of the best bumper stickers I've ever seen says, "Don't believe everything you think." Anyway, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
Thanks very much. Ryan Holiday, you know, we heard from Tom from Dayton mentioning the Wright brothers as someone he thinks of as admirable. You mentioned people in your book that you think also handled ego very well. You mentioned George Marshall, author of the Marshall Plan, you know, the strategy to rebuild Europe after World War II. You point out that he turned down a $1 million offer to write his memoir. He said that he felt like writing it would force him to say negative things about other people. He didn't want to do that. He also didn't want to keep a diary during the war because you wrote that he knew that it would probably be read and become public, and he felt like he'd be performing for history and didn't want to. And here's a guy that, as a result, you say may not be as well known as people like Eisenhower and MacArthur. So give us a sense of what you admire about Marshall and how that may have affected his legacy in history.
I think the line from Truman was, you know, never did George Marshall think about himself. And he was always thinking about the mission or the task at hand. You know, most famously, FDR floated whether he wanted command of the invasion at Normandy. And basically all Marshall had to do was ask, but he went to FDR and he said, you know, I don't want my personal feelings to have any sway on this decision. I want you to choose. Ultimately, FDR chooses Eisenhower over Marshall, arguably probably the most famous, the most singular important command in the history of modern warfare. And he passes on it to stay in Washington, to do the unsexy job of organization and coordination and all of the behind-the-scenes work. And so I think this idea of repeatedly passing on public credit to do the work that only you can do is incredibly admirable. I think the caller's point about the Wright brothers is similar there. You know, Pat Riley calls this the disease of me, that so many teams are ripped apart by the disease of me, everyone trying to get their share, what they deserve, you know, to get credit for what they bring to the table. And ultimately, this rips the team apart and everyone is worse off for it. And so I think what we have to, what ego is it's all about the disease of me, right? It's I alone can fix it. And the reality is no human, unless they are given dictatorial powers, has the ability to fix everything by themselves. And so if you can't work with a team, if you can't work with other people, you are not only hurting yourself and your own chances of success, but you're hurting everyone else involved. And so I think that is one of the reasons we have to battle against ego on this regular basis. Am I the best person to do this job? You know, who could I bring on that would make me better? You know, Abraham Lincoln famously invoking the team of rivals, bringing in the people that not only were running against him, but in some cases had snubbed him very cruelly in personal situations. He puts all that aside for what he thinks is the best team for the job at hand.
Ryan Holiday, in your book, Ego is the Enemy, you also mention Angela Merkel as someone you think who has an admirably in check ego. What do you admire about her?
Well, again, I'm trying to talk about this in a non-political way, although I'm talking about politicians. But she has this wonderful line. She says, you know, you can't solve tasks with charisma. And so often we think that the job of the politician is to get up there and get us excited and to say inspiring things. But the reality is they are administrators. They are chief executives. And they have to do the job. And that's very different than campaigning. And I think she's done a wonderful job of turning on its head, you know, what we think a politician is supposed to be like and look like and sound like, and instead she focuses on the nuts and bolts of relationships and deals and compromises and policies, and I think that's a sort of a sober model for us to look at. Regardless of what you think, if she's making the right decisions or the wrong decisions, I think the idea of saying, "Hey, I'm going to focus on the job, not going to focus on the theatrics," that's inspiring to me.
Ryan Holiday is the author of Ego is the Enemy. Underneath us, Carly Simon's You're So Vain. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I had some dreams. They were clouds in my coffee. Clouds in my coffee. And you're so vain. We probably think the song is about you. You're so vain. I'll bet you think the song is about you. Don't you? Don't you?
How do you like me now?
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook, listening to a little Toby Keith. This is How Do You Like Me Now? We're talking with author Ryan Holiday about his new book, Ego is the Enemy. And give us a call. Let us know how you think about your heroes. Did they have big egos? Did they swagger? Were they humble? Were they happy? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And let's go right to two callers who want to tell us how they think about ego. And one of them is Becky, calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Becky, your philosophy on ego.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. My biggest thing with ego is everybody has one, whether it's big, moderate, or small. But I think the biggest thing for us to remember in our success and how we measure our success is being self-aware. Everyone has faults, and everyone is confident or should be confident. And I am a confident person, and social media can play into that a bit too much. And so what I do to check myself is when I find myself admiring my pictures a bit too much or checking my social media to see how many likes I got, I kind of take a step back and say, okay, wait, no, you're being a little too vain about this. You need to just stop paying attention, because it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks about the things that I'm doing. It matters what I think about those things.
Is that hard? Do you sometimes feel like you're kind of dragging yourself away, resisting the urge?
No. I find the older I get, the easier it is, because the older I get, the more experience I have, and the more people I have experience with, different types of people. So I see lots of people who are very into their social media and how many likes do I have, and, oh, did you see my picture that I got X amount of likes? So when I find myself being that way, I do find it easy to check myself immediately and just step away from social media and not touch it, sometimes for days, to make sure that I can be more in the moment and aware of what's happening right now and my actual reality, not my social media so-called reality.
Becky, thanks for that. Let's hear from another caller. This is Bronwyn calling from Bethany, Connecticut. And Bronwyn, your ego philosophy.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, so what I have always, the way I've always looked at it is that ego can go in either of two directions. It can either go too big into thinking I'm awesome, or too small into, you know, I'm worthless and I'm going to do this all wrong. And I teach yoga and meditation, and I'm also trained in psychology. And so what I work with myself and with the people, you know, just what I think works really well is to learn to observe which way you're going, whether you're going into the huge ego or the really small ego, and then kind of learn to self-correct by observing what you're doing. And I you know, it pans in with the self-awareness previous caller was talking about.
That's interesting. And Ryan Holiday, that gets us into the issue of basically, can an ego be managed or directed? I mean, there are certain professions today that arguably require a certain willingness to self-promote. So how do you play the game professionally, but also be modest and not obnoxious? What's your strategy for managing ego?
That's a great question. I think one of the parts that's so insidious about social media is that it is essential. It's how we connect with an audience. It's how we connect with colleagues and coworkers and potential clients. So I think one of the things that I learned as a marketer is that you have to be able to have these two thoughts in your head at the same time. One, that what you present to the world in your marketing is the idealized version of your product. It's the best. You're emphasizing what's great about it, and you're not emphasizing what's not great about it. But then as the person who works at that company or as the owner of that product, you have to be ruthless at examining those flaws so you can improve them. So on the one hand, to the public, you're selling, but internally you're always seeing room for improvement and always seeing room for change. And so maybe that's sort of both ends of that spectrum we were just talking about. It's sort of, you can be a great marketer, but you can't buy your own hype. You have to be thinking ahead of that. You have to be thinking about what's next, what can be better, what you can improve. And in a way, that keeps you humble, right? If you're reflecting on how great you are compared to people who are less than you, you're not going to get any better. But if you are instead looking at all of the things that you can do to improve to be like someone that you admire or that you aspire to be like, that's gonna motivate you to strive to get better and to focus on what you can change.
So since we're talking about ego, this is not so much an idealized version of a product, but an idealized version of yourself. So are you saying that it's okay to present that ideal image perhaps online or on social media, but then you should just be conscious that there's ways to improve and you do that quietly on your own?
Yeah, I think so. Look, if you're writing an article, you're not also arguing or you're making an argument. You're not also arguing against yourself. You're putting forth the parts that you think are the strongest part of that argument. But you also have to be aware of the potential flaws and weaknesses in case someone calls you out on them, in case, you know, you need to address them. And I think it's the same thing with a product or with a person.
You know, Ryan, I know from having read a lot about you and about your book that originally you had considered writing a book about humility, which is arguably the flip side of ego. But then a book about humility began to feel problematic. So tell us how a humility book idea turned into a book about ego.
Well, that's one of the things about, I think, all creative ventures is that you start with a vague sense or an inkling of what the idea is, but it has to be able to change and you have to be able to take feedback along the way. And I think one of the things I realized was as I would study these stories of humility, they were really interesting and I liked them personally, but in a world where people are typically reading books that help them get better, they might not immediately dive into a book that they associate with, say, lowliness. So it's really the same book. I'm just tweaking which angle I'm going to attack it from. And that came out of conversations with friends, with colleagues, with my editor, with my publisher. And I had to abandon, you know, Stephen King says you have to kill your darlings. You have to kill the things that you might be most personally excited about in light of the feedback. If you're not willing to change your mind, when you're right, it's going to go well. But when you're wrong, you're going to keep pursuing this thing that's wrong far past, you know, any reasonable point.
Although it sounds like you realize that if you were going to write stories about people who are very humble, they may not make the most riveting stories. So while that is a quality to strive for, humility, it might not get people that much attention. We see the egotistical people more. So is there a downside to too much humility?
I don't know if there's a downside to too much humility. I think sometimes what we think is humility is actually just sort of self-absorption on the other end of the spectrum, right? The nobody likes me, everyone's out to get me, I'm worthless, you don't know. And you know, when you try to argue with these people and you say, actually, no, you're great, everyone likes you, they say, you don't know what you're talking about, right? It's that sort of, it's almost an equal reality distortion field, but instead of pushing them up, it's pushing them down. And so I think one of the reasons I wanted to focus on ego is I think it's easier to just take something away than it is to sort of build this entirely new model for how to live. And I think we're all great people. What we have, what happens is we make decisions or choices or, you know, orient ourselves around ego and we end up far from where we probably should be.
Let's take another caller. This is Philip from La Crosse, Wisconsin. And Philip, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've been listening, and I'm really interested in the whole idea of ego. But as a teacher, I feel like my biggest problem with my students is lack of ego. And I know that there was a difference between ego and confidence, but I really feel like ego is a problem. And when we talk about how ego gets in the way of actually functioning, my kids can't function in the wrong way because of no ego, no confidence, nothing. And so, I mean, what you're talking about is that the ego, from not having confidence, that false ego or that ego that you're developing to compensate for that is the negative, but I really feel like it's not as simple as too much ego.
Oh, that's interesting, Philip. And that actually is similar to a comment we got on our website from someone with a screen name, MOFYC. This person writes, a little bit of ego is good as it pushes the self-belief needed to attempt things that may fail. Further, we've all seen people with too little ego and self-esteem stuck in bad or outright abusive relationships. It becomes harmful when it impedes the pursuit of the proper outcome. So, Ryan, you know, is there a perfect medium? Is there such a thing as a perfectly healthy ego? Not too much, not too little.
That's something I've thought about a lot. Maybe one way to put it is, you know, if you don't believe you can do something, you're probably not going to be able to do it. But just because you believe something doesn't mean that you will be able to do it. And so I think what's essential is that you teach kids and you teach yourself to be taking pride in the right things. You know, I've based a lot of this book on stoicism, and they're always trying to zoom in on the things we control and the things we don't control. So if your ego or your confidence is based on external results, that's going to be dependent on what you've accomplished and how quickly you've accomplished it, for instance. But instead, if you're focused on taking pride and satisfaction and confidence on having done the work, on having put in the effort, that's where you're going to be in control of your own confidence. I think it's Carol Dweck who's talked about this, like the difference between telling a kid that they did well because they're smart or they did well because they worked hard. That's the sort of difference we want to have in our own lives. Like on my books, I want to take pride in the fact that they're the best book that I could have written at that point in my life, or that I put as much work as I could into the marketing and the promotion and the design and all of that, not did they hit the New York Times bestseller list or did they sell X amount of copies, or most insidious, did they sell, you know, one copy more than someone I'm competing with? That those are ultimately factors outside my control. But when I'm sitting alone in my office writing, that is in my control, and I can take pride and satisfaction and confidence from that.
Ryan Holiday, author of Ego is the Enemy. Let's hear a piece of sound from someone who really seems to have a gigantic ego, but yet is somehow beloved and very endearing. And this is Muhammad Ali. This is after beating Sonny Liston in 1964 for the heavyweight champion title. He said what would later become known as his "I am the greatest" speech. This is it.
I'm the greatest thing that ever lived. Yeah. I don't have a mark on my face,
yeah,
and I upset Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest.
So Ryan Holiday, is that out-of-control ego, or is there something about that makes us smile, and how does he find that balance that makes him liked even with that kind of confidence?
I do think there is that smile that it draws from you. It's egotistical, but it's also somewhat self-aware in a weird way. You know, there's that quote from Ali where he's saying, you know, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am, which I love because on its face, it's funny. And then also, if you think about it, it's like, yeah, you have to work really hard to be humble when you're great. I think, though, when you look at the history of boxing and now mixed martial arts, the timeless tale is that a fighter grows overconfident with its own abilities. And the up-and-comer, who doesn't have any of that, who focuses on the training, catches them by surprise and beats them. And so that is why ego, believing you are the greatest, is so dangerous, because someone else out there doesn't believe you that you're the greatest, and they're intent on proving it. And so I think focusing on the areas that you need to improve and focusing on where you can get better is ultimately a better formula than say bragging that you're the best in the world.
Ryan Holiday, do you consider yourself to have a big ego?
I think I have an ego just like everyone else, and I think it's when I look back at problems I've had in my life, ego is almost always the root of it, right? At the root of it. I cringe sometimes when I look at my own early writing and I see a sense of certainty or arrogance there that I didn't deserve, that was probably pushing away potential readers and was making me feel like the world was simpler than it actually was. When I look at conflicts I've gotten in, when I look at things that I've gotten really worked up about, it's usually trying to beat someone or getting a one, you know, that one up, one down with someone. And so I have an ego like everyone else. I don't think writing this book was coming from a place of having mastered my ego, but rather from someone who's thinking about this all the time and trying to combat it in my own life, because I know that the second I sort of give into it, it hurts me, it hurts the people I love, and it hurts my own career.
You do have a line in your book that says that a good strategy is to stay happy, you should stay hidden. That's quite interesting, although, again, this is a world in which for many jobs, people feel the need to be in the public eye. So give us sort of your best advice on how you find the perfect medium.
Well, I think one would be that you're working more than you're promoting, certainly, right? This interview is fun. I'm glad to do it, but it doesn't compare to the pleasure of creating something new. And I think if you're getting into some creative field or really anything, for the potential rewards more than the process, the act of doing it, that's probably a lopsided ratio. And so it's really about finding that thing that you love doing, that you do for its own sake. I think those are the moments in which our ego is at its smallest point, because we're focused on this project. We're focused on fulfilling some creative vision. What we're not focused on is validation or aggrandizement or any of these other things.
So some time for book tour, some time for tweeting, and then sometimes just for quiet time to think and to write and to forget about being in the public eye.
I think so. There's a story I tell in the book about George Marshall. He sits for an official portrait, and he goes day after day, and they take the portrait. And then the painter says, you can leave. And he gets up to leave the room, and the painter says, you know, don't you want to see your portrait? And he says, no, I'm good, because he knows what he looks like, and he has to get back to work.
Ryan Holiday, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan's new book is Ego is the Enemy. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and continue the conversation there. You can also find our podcast there and follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, in an aging nation, what makes an age-friendly community? We look at what U.S. cities can do to help seniors live better. Let's go out with Beyoncé's Ego. And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Such a huge ego.
Back it up. Usually I'm humble, right now I don't choose. You can leave with me, or you could have the blues. Some call it arrogant, I call it confident. You decide when you find out what I'm working with. I know I'm killing you with them legs, but yet them thighs. Matter of fact, it's my smile, or maybe my eyes. Boy, you a sight to see, kind of something like me. It's too big, it's too wide. It's too strong, it won't fit. It's too much, it's too tough. I talk like this, cause I can back it up. I got a big